Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 227.
This week on the podcast, party line Dems are hoping to add the New York City mayor's race to the list of unlosable races they can manage to bungle.
Plus, Vladimir Putin is the most prescient member of the GOP. He went all in for Trump before even the American people.
And we've now confirmed that the American people will pay for Trump's wall. Didn't we already give him a gift?
And domestic, non-Islamic terrorism continues to be the worst fear of Americans who believe in gun death statistics.
And the GOP finally has their big chance to repeal Obamacare. So let the defections begin.
Michelle Obama won the internet this week.
And Donald Trump hates children and fun. It's now officially confirmed.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You can apparently find us in various modes of health
this week
and only this week, possibly.
I know. Yeah.
Who knows when the next health defections will begin, but
yeah.
Soon.
Yeah.
Most likely soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So enjoy it while it lasts.
That's right.
Yeah. This week, we will have the beginning of the Trump Senate confirmations
right.
process.
Pay attention to this,
so
guys.
So pay attention to that.
Because this is when we're going to have to start paying attention.
I mean,
we should have been paying attention already. But now is when we can actually sort of like get behind, you know, some like...
A thing.
A thing. Right, exactly. And we're already starting to see like some coalescing behind, you know, like Jeff Sessions,
yes.
Rex Tillerson... Betsy DeVos,
some of the most public and least qualified Senate confirmations processes that are about to
be. Right, exactly. Like, we've already seen the ACLU sort of, I think they were doing like a
sit-in
at Jeff Sessions' office.
The head of the NAACP got arrested at that sit-in.
Right.
Guys, that's dumb.
So,
he has a platform. Don't arrest him.
So get involved here. We've already told you who to call, how you can get in contact with people.
Right. We'll continue posting about that.
Pay attention, because some of these guys should not
be allowed near other humans.
Right. So do all you can.
A lot of them haven't completed the background checks and ethics clearances that they need to, so that's another exciting...
That's not going to hold them up.
Not in this Congress.
Mitch McConnell doesn't care.
No, doesn't give a shit.
No.
So that's what to pay attention to next week.
Yeah.
Last week, there was plenty to pay attention to, though.
Sure was.
Because it was week two of Congress...
Right.
...the extravaganza.
And we finally
got to...
Or week
one, I guess.
Right, yeah, we finally got
to
see what
some
of their plans
are. We just came to you on Wednesday last week, so I forgot.
At best.
To begin with, though, I wanted to talk briefly before because we covered the sort of early on antics, because we did such a late podcast last week, I felt like we could open this podcast with a discussion of the several sources that are now reporting that that Hillary Clinton might be mulling over a run for New York City mayor, and the Frank Bruni column that begins by saying that it would be a terrible idea and ends by encouraging her to run. I have a few thoughts.
None of them are good, by the way.
Like, none. I think New York Magazine's article on this had a great first sentence that kind of sums up everything.
It was so good.
The idea of Hillary Clinton running for New York City mayor moved from dumb and impossible to unlikely on Friday, as both The Times and Daily News reported the possibility.
Right.
I heard about it from this Frank Bruni column in The Times.
Yeah.
And it is something that was first picked up by Newsmax,
right.
which is a fake news site,
right,
basically.
And it's a Republican conservative rag.
Yeah.
And they were reporting on Democratic power players as if...
Well, they love doing
they
that.
Would, A, know who those people were, or as if those people would ever speak to Newsmax.
Right.
So it sounded questionable. I mean... It still sounds questionable,
but,
very questionable to begin
with. If there's one thing Newsmax knows, it's how to start a rumor that becomes a problem.
Right, exactly. Because what happened was everybody was like, well, this sounds bonkers. And then you had the actual Democratic power players, who they referenced, not necessarily by name, but come out and then stoke the rumor.
Yeah. Because I guarantee that there are a bunch of, like, Wall Street hacks and party-line Democrats who are saying this.
There's a ton of people that this sounds like a great idea to.
Like, who is leaking this? Where is it coming from? Because it feels like when she wasn't going to run for president.
Right, exactly.
Where they were like, no, she's going to be a grandmother.
She's got
beautiful grandchildren, and she did that already, and she's done. And the whole time we knew she was absolutely going to run.
Right.
So it was like the people dropping the rumor were doing it for her.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, you guys. I want to make a couple points. One is, I understand that de Blasio has been disappointing to some New Yorkers. I would contend that he at least has not misplaced priorities, which is the first time that that's happened in a long time. And that he was handed a sort of untenable situation because the police basically like refused to acknowledge him when he took office because there were all of these fucking shootings.
Right.
Where they were, or them not shooting, but killing unarmed
killing
black
people.
People.
Right, yeah.
And I would also contend that, you know, people are allowed to have their opinions about de Blasio. I would contend that our street gets snowplowed really quickly for the first time ever. So maybe our street was the only beneficiary of the de Blasio regime. But we saw at the local level some important changes. So I don't hate him. But I understand people who think he's been ineffective. Here's a few things. One is, don't primary him and cause a giant chasm between the moderate left and the far left in a city where the Democrat absolutely should and can win.
Right.
That's one. If you want to figure out how to have him gracefully step down, you know how to engineer that behind the scenes. If you want to figure out a candidate that can be elected, you have a million people to choose from in New York City.
Yeah.
8 million people to choose from. In fact, like, we don't need Hillary Clinton to come in and save us. But here's the other thing. Hillary Clinton does not,
she won't,
has not,
by the
never
way.
Has resided in the city of New York. She lives in Chappaqua. She has never lived in the city
right.
of New York a day
she's
in
got
her
a
life.
Fancy office in Brooklyn, but
she's got an office in Brooklyn. The Clinton Foundation is headquartered in Harlem. I get why you might be confused about where she resides currently.
Right.
But I just want to say for the record that the worst thing that you can do, especially in a city that is so proud of its own heritage and its own people, is run a carpetbagger for mayor and then be shocked when a totally easy winnable race becomes unwinnable.
Right.
And I would also like to point out that likely she would have the support of some people that I think sound good to well-off New Yorkers at the moment. You know, there are people who still like Bloomberg.
Bloomberg, yeah, exactly.
But not enough people that, you know, a lot of those people don't realize how angry the voting base was at him about his third term antics.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize how closely the story of Christine Quinn paralleled the Hillary
about
Clinton
to
story.
Say, we wrote
you know, we
a
had
blog
an,
about
we had
that.
A,
I mean,
a landslide win candidate who couldn't get elected.
Right.
That's how Anthony Weiner almost became the mayor of New York. And here's
right.
the thing. A lot of New Yorkers still like him.
Like, know.
That is how much, like, you have to be of and by New York to be
right.
the mayor of New York.
Exactly.
Like, I just, like, this is not the right time to pull this antic. And if they choose to do that, they will be the Bernie Sanders campaign that they feared. You know, they blamed the Bernie Sanders for dividing the party and giving
yeah,
people
totally.
Ideas that weren't
yeah.
their ideas and all this shit.
Yeah.
That move is you being the Bernie Sanders
yeah.
of the race.
Yep.
You don't get to be the winner just because you're Hillary Clinton. But
no.
don't carpet bag in the same state twice.
I
don't want to hear any of that shit.
I know, exactly.
Just as, so that we know, Hillary Clinton, the mayor's race is, I think, this year or next year.
She, yes, it's...
It's 2017 for 2018, isn't it? Or is it 2018 for 2019?
I can't remember. Yeah.
The point is, as of this exact moment, Hillary Clinton does not live in the city of New York.
Right.
She is not a resident of New York. She has never once been a resident of New York. She
yeah.
would have to move tomorrow to be a resident of New York in time to run, basically. Like, let's not... Like, would you accept some random asshole from Long Island to be the mayor? No. And that person probably was born and raised on Long Island.
Right.
You know, that person is of us.
Right.
I'm not electing some asshole from Chappaqua just because she's famous. I'm just saying. In any case, I think this is a terrible idea.
It's a terrible
I had a huge
idea.
Argument with a good friend of mine about it because he was like, oh, but I feel so bad for her. And I really, people would vote for her because they love her. And I was like, first of all, this is the most divisive thing that you could do in an election.
Right.
Second of all, if you think that all New Yorkers love her and there was not a huge portion of the party that was Bernie supporters that felt pissed off and angry that they had to vote for her, then you are a crazy person who
yeah.
deserves not to have a voice in this. And like, also... When did we New Yorkers who left New York get to start saying that New Yorkers were going to love a carpetbagger?
Right.
If I was in New York City right now, and that's the thing. If I was, like, I would vote for a carpetbagger in LA. I don't fucking care. I'm a carpetbagger.
Right.
Like, I'm not from
yeah.
here. I would,
no,
like.
Nobody is.
Nobody is. New York is not like that, though. New Yorkers right. have a very specific sense of identity, and I just think this is the dumbest possible idea.
Yeah.
So power players, power brokers, you failed to listen to us in 2013 right. when we warned you about the presidential election not being winnable for you.
Right.
You lost and handed over the reins to an actual madman.
Crazy person.
Do
yeah.
not
mm-hmm.
put New York
Don't
City
do that again.
In that position after you put Donald Trump in office.
Right.
Don't do that to us twice.
Oy.
Okay, you guys. Also...
All right.
The CIA released the unclassified version of their report on Putin.
Right, that Obama ordered from
right.
with all the intelligence agencies where they looked into this.
You guys...
It's bad, by
Vladimir
the way.
Putin is a Republican.
He is?
I want to stop talking about him like he's some evil foreign power that's just wreaking havoc.
Right.
He came in to a situation
yes.
where there were two parties, one of which was going to win,
yes.
threw his weight behind one party
yeah,
while
because,
spreading lies about the other. That's
before,
what Republicans do
right.
when they want Republicans to be elected. Democrats
yeah.
do the opposite.
Right, because one of the things that we found out here is that he... didn't get into this initially because he was such a huge fan of Donald Trump. He became
like all Republicans.
Right, he became a huge fan of Donald Trump at a certain point, but he got involved in this back in 2015 because he hated Hillary Clinton. So it didn't have anything to do with Donald Trump.
No.
It does now,
this
obviously.
This is, by the way, how all Republican voters' thought process went.
Right. Exactly.
They were like, I hate Hillary Clinton. What are my other options?
Right.
Oh,
anyone.
This idiot.
This,
sounds fine.
This buffoon. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and especially one that exhibits behavior so similar to mine.
Yeah, because they started hacking the DNC. They were hacking the DNC for like 11 months, we found out in this report.
Who did we find out from, Brent?
Not the DNC or the American government, but from the Brits.
The Brits.
The British Intelligence Agency
British Intelligence
told the United States
that our
Russia
Democratic
was
National
hacking
Committee.
The DNC. We found that out in this report, too. So that doesn't give me much faith.
This is a mess.
In anything.
You guys.
Yeah.
I don't trust anything anymore.
Right.
At all. I've gone full conspiracy. I will believe any idiot story that is made up about any person doing anything. As long as the British verify it.
Right.
They seem to know.
Yeah.
But in any case, by 2016, Vladimir Putin was in it to get Donald Trump elected.
Then he was.
He discovered
a
kindred spirit in Donald Trump because they're both crazy people.
Well, and Donald Trump started talking, you know, about how he was going to work with Vladimir Putin pretty early on.
Yeah, so
he wanted to get along with everybody. Why shouldn't we have a good relationship with Russia?
They're not crazy.
No.
But so, in any case, this report, were you to be the kind of person that believes facts, is quite damning about how and why Russia got involved, and also how and why America failed to acknowledge that this was happening for so long.
Right. Well, and that is the thing that it's funny because one of the other things that we learned in this report was that because, you know, we ultimately got wind of this, or most people did, through WikiLeaks.
Right.
There was the whole WikiLeaks connection. WikiLeaks said they didn't get it from Russia. But what happened was that we found out was that Russia basically set up this website. They had like this...
The DNC hacks or whatever.
Yeah, DNC leaked emails or whatever. And there was like the whole like Gussifer or whatever you say. DC, right. And so that all... And where they like basically like dumped all of these emails or whatever.
Yeah.
And guess what? Nobody paid any fucking attention. Probably A, because the news media wasn't paying any attention.
Right.
And the people who were paying attention were Bernie people who were getting, you know, called crazy conspiracy wacko nuts at that point when they were being
I remember when DC leaks links were going around.
I sure do too.
But you
and
only know that if you were a Bernie person.
If you were like in the dark corners of like the Bernie web, basically. And like,
and there was a lot of discussion about where these leaks had happened and why.
Right, exactly.
Among the Bernie people.
So Russia became displeased with the fact that nobody was reading these damn DNC leaked emails. So they gave them to WikiLeaks.
Yeah. That's what you do when you want your emails to get read.
So, like, we could and should have known about this. To her credit, I mean, she brought this up, as we know, in a debate, and everybody thought that she was, like, a wild,
well,
she insane
she brought
woman.
It up
but, I
in
mean,
a context that made her sound defensive and insane.
Right, exactly.
By the way, she didn't bring it up in a great
way. But if you were paying attention properly to this at the point that Russia wanted you to be, not that I'm saying we should be doing what Russia wants, but we probably also would have ended up with a different nominee.
Yeah. Or at least we would have ended up with different information coming out in time for the actual election.
Correct.
If nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
so it's questionable that this was, that nobody seemed to care about this until now. And the only reason that we care about it now is because Donald Trump accidentally won the election.
Yeah. No, exactly.
And that's upsetting. Like, do better people.
Everyone.
Right.
All the people.
Yeah.
But yeah, this story, I mean, I have two minds about this. Because again, as we've reiterated repeatedly, I don't want to let the Clinton campaign off the hook.
Right.
You know, all this did was release information. And the information wasn't so damning that there wasn't a way.
It really actually wasn't.
I mean, it was, like, I remember when those emails came out and we were talking about, like, these are kind of weak compared to what I would have expected. You know, it was like shit talking. It was like petty.
Yeah.
It was mostly petty nonsense. And it was like confirming a thing that was already so openly obvious to every person who wasn't just like didn't have their head stuck up their ass. Which was, of course, the DNC was in for Hillary Clinton. That wasn't even a question.
Right.
Why anyone was denying that was like insane to me.
Yeah.
But because we just sort of like only ever heard about it in the context of like crazy Russian hacks brought up out of nowhere at a debate.
Right.
And because the only people who had known about it before were Bernie people that were being called conspiracy theorists.
Right.
For spreading the information, by the way. Not for getting the information.
Right.
We were being called conspiracy theorists for taking information that we were getting and wondering if we should believe it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like on the one hand, there were still things they could have done to prevent this from being meaningful, because it wasn't that interesting,
right,
as hacks go.
True.
Also, though, my other mind is that I really wish that Russia would not hack into our elections.
Obviously, yes.
So these hacks, by the way, they're all into emails and things. There's no evidence that they tampered with the counting of the votes. But as we've said,
right,
there's more to voting than just the counting,
right,
of the votes.
Exactly.
People have to show up to cast those
and
votes. And that's where it made
this
a
report,
meaningful difference.
And this report doesn't get into the impact on the election, because
no,
it basically was not,
well,
the job of
that,
this,
yeah,
report. It was just to sort of report the facts and not sort of guess at to how,
right,
this affected people's mindsets when they, because how do you do that, I guess,
exactly,
on some level.
But this is like such a crazy, this, it feels very much like 2000, where we have this evidence that something unprecedented and crazy happened.
Right.
And we're just like, well, we'll just proceed.
Right.
We'll exactly, nothing will happen now. We'll just continue on as if this,
right,
is a totally normal turn of events. Peaceful transfer of power. We're,
right,
just going to step back and do nothing. By the way, going back to our first story,
yeah,
if after all this peaceful transfer of power nonsense, the first move Hillary Clinton decides to make is to be the mayor of New York City because she'll be tough on fucking Trump.
Yeah.
Like, I will pull my own hair out. She hasn't, like, she's had a chance to be tough on Trump.
Right?
Where's
she been?
She's Where's
going
she
to
been?
The inauguration. That's what she's,
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, she's tacitly approving of what's happening and has in no way indicated that she is at all sort of, like, concerned about,
right,
the outcome here.
Trump did finally, because he got the classified,
yeah,
version of this report, and finally...
Finally forced to admit it was real.
Finally acknowledged that it was real, but then also claimed that it didn't affect the outcome, which,
right,
I mean, is easy for him to do since...
Yeah, well,
how can anyone say whether it did or not?
Right, there's,
I mean,
no way to definitively prove or not prove.
But I think it's hard to say that it had no effect.
Yeah, it's also hard not to say that it was specifically done in his favor.
Yeah.
By the way, this was part of a larger plan that Putin has to kind of create his own kind of block of diplomatic power and,
yeah,
you know, his and sort of enact his own vision for getting rid of the sort of Islamic terrorism situation.
Yeah, he thinks he's got a good partner here in Trump, which is sort of...
But the report makes clear that the reason he targeted Trump specifically was because he, quote, had previous success with, quote, Western political leaders whose business interests made them more disposed to deal with Russia. And he uses Silvio
Berlusconi
as an example.
Like, come on.
Didn't we compare him to Berlusconi repeatedly throughout the race?
Yes.
Like, he's like such a Berlusconi.
Yeah.
He's like the...
Oh,
and
God.
New York is the only place that could create a Berlusconi in America, I think. He's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
By the way, if you were thinking that Donald Trump's talk about being tough on Mexico, or literally anywhere, was in any way a thing that would happen...
Right.
Once again, we've shown he's a terrible negotiator.
Right. Well, we already know that he went down and met with the president of Mexico.
Forgot to ask him about the wall.
Yeah. And the reason that he forgot to ask him about the wall is because apparently he doesn't really think that he has any intention of asking Mexico to pay for it anyway.
No, he has an intention of asking them after we've paid for it.
Right.
To reimburse us.
They're
going to
reimburse. We're going to.
You know how that works.
We're going to send him an invoice.
Yeah.
For the
wall. You know how Mexico just ponies up for anything.
Billions of dollars. We're just going to be like, oh, hey, by the way, we spent all this money. We'd like you to give it back to us now.
Like, that's something Mexico's famous for doing.
Or anyone. Like that's not.
Right, any person. Like, if you sent me an invoice for $3 million right now because you had bought a $3 million house, I would be like, go fuck yourself.
Right, exactly. Yes.
I'm not going to pay you $3 million for your house.
Right. So Congress and Trump are really intent on building Trump's wall. We're going to start calling it Trump's wall, by the way. That's Viola's idea, which is
idea
genius, by the way.
Is, we're not going to call it the wall with Mexico. We're not going to call it
the
wall.
Or even the wall.
We're going to call it Trump's wall so that we can say the sentence, the American people are being asked to pay for Trump's wall.
Yeah.
Because we're basically giving him a gift here.
Yeah, we are.
Especially because he is so in bed with development interests and other construction interests.
Yeah.
Like, we are actually giving him personally a gift, most likely, here as well. So it's not a gift of, like, a win.
Right.
We're giving him, like, a money gift as well. But this is not a wall for us. This is a wall for him. It's a political statement for him. It doesn't do anything for us.
Yeah.
We don't need the wall.
Yeah.
He needs the wall. So it's his wall. We're only going to call it Trump's wall.
This is going to be a hard sell, A, because of the price tag, and B,
it's so expensive.
It's
you
so
guys.
Expensive. It's like $6.5 million
for a single layer.
Per
mile.
Per mile, and it's like
an additional $4.2 million per mile for roads and more
for
fencing.
Roads around. So it's going to cost like tens of billions of dollars, and you know, he obviously ran his whole campaign on Mexico paying for this, and I know that he still claims that they're going to pay us back for it later, but. If they are not going to pay us back, let's even assume that they will pay us back. Like, let's just go to that fantasy land where unicorns and rainbows and Mexico paying us for the wall all exist.
Right.
You still are going to have to pass a budget
that includes this funding.
With the tens of billions of dollars that includes this funding to get it started being built if you're going to build it and then expect to be paid for it later. So obviously we're not going to have the money from Mexico up front. I would contend that we're never going to have the money from Mexico. But even if we get it at some point, it's going to be a hard sell to pass a budget, A, to Democrats, because they don't want the damn thing in the first place.
Exactly.
And B, to everybody who voted for him who thinks that Mexico is going to pay for the damn thing. So I dare them to go there. I mean, let's try and pass a budget with billions
and
billions
of dollars. This is a 2,000 mile fence.
Yeah.
So at $10 billion a mile, that's...
Or no, it's a million.
I mean, 10...
But it gets into the tens of billions total cost, right?
We're talking about... Yeah, we're talking about a potentially more than that, because obviously it's construction, you guys. That doesn't... Yeah, that's not on budget usually.
No, it'll be more than
we're talking about an amount of money that they regularly claim that we can't spend on the American people.
On anything. Yeah.
Like... This is money. This is like a classic Republican sort of absurd departure from their own talking points about spending, which I sort of am curious to see how they frame this in a budget resolution. Trump claims that he's going to get them to pay it back because he's going to renegotiate NAFTA.
Which,
good luck.
I know. He said, so he said he was doing this interview and he said that they were going to renegotiate NAFTA, and then he said it's going to be part of everything, like this money from Mexico. That was his. I don't know what that means. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, we're gonna renegotiate it,
and it's gonna be everything.
Yeah,
and so we'll get the money back because of everything.
Yeah, because of all the things.
Yeah,
you know about the things.
The things.
Yeah,
it's gonna force them to
Mexico, famous for being forced to pony up tons of money for the things.
Right.
Us, famous for asking. It's going to work out beautifully because it's worked out so many times before in similar situations, of which there are none.
Right.
Because no country has ever built a wall around themselves and then asked the countries on the outside of the wall to pay for it.
It's nuts. It's so good.
I mean, it's nuts. Yeah. So as a side note, while we're on the topic of Trump to get into, there's two things we want to mention exist that will help you monitor Trump's activities as time goes on.
Yeah. Sometimes it becomes really daunting, guys.
For us, it's really daunting.
Who try to keep up with it, sometimes it becomes a lot.
Well, because you can comment on the major stories, but there's also all of the inaccurate tweets, and there's all there's all of the smaller actions that you don't necessarily have context for or time.
There's all of his cabinet people. How do you keep track of all of that?
There's a trillion of them.
It's a full time job.
Two resources. Washington Post is doing a weekly feature about what is inaccurate in Trump's tweeting.
Right.
So they go through his tweets by the week.
God bless whoever's in charge of that. Jesus.
It's probably the most exciting job in the world, actually. It sounds so entertaining.
I know, right?
But so they're going through his tweets every week and pulling out what is and is not true from those tweets. The other thing is that New York Magazine has been keeping an ongoing list of all of his terrifying actions.
Right. That's literally what the headline of
terrifying actions that Donald Trump has done.
Right.
It's the headline.
Yeah. And they're updating that on a weekly basis.
So
they just started doing it very recently in the new year.
And it's already
very long.
They're going
to keep updating it. It's very long. We were thinking about pulling some of the things from
it.
And then
we were
like,
we're not doing that.
We're just going to tell you
that
it exists.
A lot of it is stuff we've already posted. I mean,
post both of these things for people so they can have access to
them. And a lot of this is stuff you've already heard on this podcast if you've been listening regularly.
Right.
But it's good to sort of have your own resource to go back to.
It's good to have it all in one place.
Exactly.
I mean, it's terrifying to have it all in one place.
Not great at all. But so these are two resources that maybe would help all of us sort of keep track of things, because we've been stressing how important it is that we pay attention and that we know how to contact our representatives and that we know how to contact anyone else that we feel like is important in, because you can also, you can call Mitch McConnell's office. You can call Paul Ryan's office. You can call these people. You can call Chuck Schumer's office. Certainly do that. He's up to shenanigans. But you can call all of these people as well. So this will help you stay on top of things.
Yeah.
Now moving on to the most classic American story of the week, which is that we had a lone shooter incident at the Fort Lauderdale airport. Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary, inexplicably
live tweeted it.
That's so weird.
Also, it was live everywhere, television-wise, too.
Yeah,
which was
live cast.
Very bizarre. I mean,
it felt
weird. It felt very tense, and obviously, as it would when there's
a shooter running around an airport.
Like, it's just weird to be able to just
experience
look at
that live. I know,
but
these are these kinds of things. Like, I mean, even the the Kennedy assassination was
that's true.
Live. Yeah. I mean, 9/11 was live. Like, that's true. Sometimes, I know. If Ari Fleischer's present, these things can be live. Yep. You know, if someone's there with a camera.
I know.
This is, though, I think we'd had a bunch of scares of airport shootings lately in New York and L.A., like in the run-up to the election. Yeah. None of those turned out to be real. One was caused by people clapping for Usain Bolt, for example.
Sure.
But this actually involved a gun.
Yes.
Five people died. 8 more were wounded.
Yeah.
The assailant was Esteban Santiago, who was a man suffering from mental health issues, clearly. Yeah. He was 26. Yep. He was a 26-year-old lone male shooter. 26-year-old men are like the most dangerous people on earth.
I know. He wasn't white, so that's... I mean, I don't know. But I don't know what that means. Usually it's the mid-20-year-old guys that you should be afraid of.
You can be agitated and incoherent, as they called
you sure
him.
You can.
In any background, any race.
That's right.
But I mean,
you can.
He was somebody who had been in the Alaska Army National Guard and had been discharged. For unsatisfactory performance.
The FBI.
He had also gone to Iraq with the Puerto Rico National Guard. So
right.
he was someone who probably was suffering from PTSD and other mental health issues. And probably we didn't have veteran services available to him.
And he walked into an FBI office in Anchorage in November and like made a bunch of disturbing comments that prompted like the FBI officials to like urge him to go seek mental health care.
So he was somebody that was sort of a known basket case.
Right, exactly. He was a known basket case.
That's a sensitive way to put it, you guys.
We didn't necessarily have him on our radar as someone who wouldn't go and shoot up an airport, but you can't.
That's the thing that the guns make possible, you know?
Exactly.
If you're just like a lone crazy person,
you can't know every single
post on a message board with other crazy people, you're just going to suddenly go and shoot up an airport.
We can't be responsible to know the existence of every single person who might be crazy enough to shoot everyone.
Exactly. What we need to know is that those people don't have guns.
Correct.
And that would be great if none of us did.
I was going to say, the easiest way to know that that person doesn't have a gun is to make sure that we all don't have one.
So I'm about to make a really controversial statement.
I am prepared for it. I think I know what it is, and I'm excited about it.
Which is that I'm positing that, because when people in my office heard about this, everyone's first reaction was literally, and I quote, is this Islamic terrorism?
Everybody wants to find out what kind of terrorism it is.
It was terrorism.
Yes, of course.
It was domestic terrorism. And I'm about to say that there has not been a single moment of Islamic terrorism in Florida, despite the fact that people die constantly, despite the fact that they had a terrible terrorist attack just last year, committed by a man who happened to be Muslim, but was an American man who was in his mid-20s or whatever it was, and was having mental health issues and went and shot up a nightclub.
Yeah.
I'm about to suggest that Florida is running rampant with terrorism, and that none of it is Islamic terrorism, and that all of it is domestic terrorism.
And it's more terrifying than Islamic terrorism could ever
be. You are infinitely more likely to die in an act of domestic terrorism in the United States of America than in an act of Islamic terrorism.
Of course.
And at this point, we have so much domestic terrorism that the lines are getting blurred, because now if we have domestic terrorism committed by a Muslim person, we act like it's fucking like Islamic terrorism, and it's not.
Right. Or we act as if 5 people being killed in an airport, if it's not by a Muslim person, is not terrorism.
Right. And it's some sort of isolated incident that doesn't have larger resonance.
Right.
Meanwhile, Dylan Roof this week didn't express remorse for the fact that he'd shot up a church. Like, these are a series of incidents that are reflecting a mindset that is uniform.
Yes.
And that is a very American mindset.
And that should terrify you more than the threat of Islamic terrorism.
You are currently, now who knows what happens when Donald Trump becomes the president? The world's already unstable enough. But you are currently statistically so much less likely to be even affected by Islamic terrorism than you are to be shot by your friends and neighbors.
Yeah.
That it is like not even, if you live in Florida, I don't want to hear a word about being worried about literally anyone that doesn't look like you, unless that person is a white person with a gun.
Yep.
Because, or like literally any young man with a gun.
Yeah.
Because that currently is your biggest threat in Florida.
Totally.
Young men with guns.
And you know what? It's getting potentially easier to get a gun in Florida, too, because hilariously, like, or not hilariously, I suppose,
this
shooting comes as Florida is debating whether they're going to take up legislation that would relax, like, the prohibition of firearms, that would make it easier for anybody in the state to get firearms.
And also that would eliminate gun-free zones in airports, government meetings.
So it would make it legal for you to have that gun at the airport.
Like, what? Also, goodbye Disney World. Like, if, like, this is, like,
yeah,
this is a vacation capital, right, you guys.
It's not that, it's no longer the happiest place on earth.
That's not going to be the happiest place on earth at all.
No.
Like, not even a little.
No.
But, like, this, like, the distinction between terrorism with three exclamation points and terrorism the word is important.
Yeah.
Because we, I think, as we've said repeatedly, like, we need to start calling these actions terrorist actions so that we identify that there is a motivation and mindset behind them that is something we can address and is specific.
Yeah.
It is about our sort of reliance on guns, our lack of mental health services, and the fact that we are socializing men to feel like it is appropriate to, because women are not committing these mass shootings. So it is a specific sector of people that are committing them.
Yeah.
It is mostly, and this obviously sounds like someone who was suffering from some sort of mental health issues and PTSD.
Or something
these are
like that,
treatable
right?
things that you can keep guns out of the hands of people who are suffering from them,
right.
But also, we need to talk about why it is that these actions are not being conflated with each other.
Right.
But anytime a Muslim person like says an insensitive word to somebody, it's like suddenly
right.
Islamic terrorism. And I, in as part of that, insist that there is no Islamic terrorism currently in Florida. Right. Pulse nightclub be damned. That was terrorism for sure. It was domestic terrorism.
Yep.
So in any case, I rest in my case. But also I want gun control laws passed immediately. And I'm not going to Florida until this is sorted out.
Right, exactly.
Sounds terrifying there.
Oh, well, back to Trump. We're stuck with him, guys.
You guys, we tried last ditch effort that was never going to work anyway.
No one thought it was going to work, but they tried it anyway.
Sheila Jackson and Barbara Lee, or Sheila Jackson Lee and Barbara Lee, the Lees. The Lees of Congress. Yes.
They had to certify the Electoral College votes this week. It's basically just a ceremonial thing that Congress does. It's a joint session. And you can challenge basically to the point where like all it causes is for people
more
to go
discussion.
Debate whether like it's
but you
just
get you have
discussion.
To have people from both houses.
Right, exactly. So you have to have somebody from the House and the Senate. And we had two members of the House and they couldn't get a senator to take it up with them. So it basically just was quickly moved past by Joe Biden who had the unfortunate task of, you know, presiding over the proceedings.
It's like there was a standing ovation and cheers from the Republicans
when he said it's over. Right? Since when do all of them love Trump so much?
Well, they just found out that he is just going to appoint a bunch of business people and do exactly what they've always suspected. Yeah.
It was only the fourth time since 1877 that there has been a challenge.
But it was the second time in the last 20 years.
Right, because the last time that it happened, there was a senator, and it actually made them break for 2 hours. It was in 2004 when
it was George Bush's re-election. Ohio voting irregularities.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so they actually did have to go and like break for like
2 hours.
That
again was the election that Kerry's people are still bemoaning the fact that they didn't challenge the vote counts.
I know, it's so funny. Like everybody sort of like points to 2000 as sort of like the most insane U.S. election, and it was for like very obvious reasons. But like also like
2004 had its own issues.
Really, there's a lot of people out there who rightly think that John Kerry might have been president.
Yeah.
So.
Not that that was such great shakes either, but it was better than George Bush.
It would have been better than the alternative, yeah.
Nightmare. Anyway. By the way, guys, you know how we're repealing Obamacare?
Yeah.
To replace it with a much better plan that will definitely work?
Right, that nobody knows what it is.
We're not doing that.
No.
And that's because in the like 6 years that they've had to come up with an alternative plan to Obamacare.
Right.
Because you know they've been repealing it that whole time.
Right.
It's been repealed and I don't exaggerate, hundreds and hundreds of times.
Yes.
All of that energy went into apparently just figuring out how to make votes to repeal it. None of it went into coming up with an alternate plan.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, Republicans voted. It was so easy to vote on the repeal of Obamacare when the Democrats had the Senate and
nothing could happen.
And the president and Obama was the president. So they knew that there was no chance that, they were all symbolic at that point.
Yeah.
Now they are the actual ruling party and they're scared shitless.
Like
they don't know what to do because they realize that the whole repeal and replace thing, they only have half of.
Yeah. And this has been, they've had 6 years to come up with a plan. I have some theories about why they don't.
Yeah.
One is Obamacare is their plan. So they're a little lost because as we've reminded you tirelessly
it's the Heritage
Foundation's 1980 healthcare plan that was going to bring huge corporate profits back into the insurance world.
Right.
It was a plan that Mitt Romney first put into place. It was a plan that the Republican establishment had been proffering for years.
When you break down Obamacare, it's forcing people to buy private insurance company. And
putting government subsidies into the hands of private corporations. That is what Republicans live for.
That's like the Republican fucking wet dream right there.
So the problem that they have is that everyone, they've riled up all this anger at it. Everyone's really unhappy about it.
Right.
But their alternate plan is Obamacare.
Right.
They have no other alternate plan.
Right.
Because the other alternate plans are so insufficient and ridiculous that they would immediately result in all of those people being replaced.
Correct.
And we're going to end up with fucking Medicare for all if they're not careful, which is okay with me.
Great.
But I don't think it's okay with them.
No.
But
it's not.
These Trump voters are way more likely to go for Medicare for all than they are for one of these
being kicked off their healthcare
insane plans. Because there are a few ideas floating around.
Right.
But none of them have become the plan because all of them are bad ideas.
Right. Nobody has, there's been, you know, the Republican study committee or whatever, released the plan that they had been coming up with this last week. But like, there's not very many people who actually think that it's going to be the plan because there's basically
it's like subsidies and getting, you know, allowing you to buy state insurance out of state.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Stuff that has never for a million years been proven to even be half effective in any case.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, and it's so funny to hear all of them talk to, because we even heard Donald Trump talk about this in that interview, like right after he got elected, where he had talked to Obama and he was talking about all of the things that he liked in Obamacare, like where people could stay on their parents' insurance until they were 26, where we couldn't kick people off of insurance for pre-existing conditions and things like that. But like, what the Republicans sort of have never been able to grasp, or they grasp perfectly well, but they just sort of like have running against it, is that it's forcing people to pay into insurance that is able to pay for those things.
Yeah. No, so they are like now trying to just like repeal it, and they're doing repeal and replace, repeal now, and what did we call it? Repeal and delay.
So yeah, that's the new thing.
Repeal it and then have no plan.
Right.
That's a nightmare plan. And this, by the way, like, to pay for the plan where they're going to give everyone tax credits, they are going to have to cut other domestic spending.
Right.
So this, like, we're going to experience cuts in all sorts of services in order to pay for a plan where we end up paying more for health insurance.
Right.
If this non-plan happens.
Yeah.
So the bigger problem is because of the repeal and delay plan has an obstacle, which is that insurance companies are very unlikely to stick around in the exchanges if they think that it's about to be...
if it's going
to
go away.
They were losing money, and the reason they stuck it out is because they expected to eventually make tons of money on it, which they were going to.
Yeah.
And because of that, so there were some kinks being ironed out, and they were sort of promised that they would essentially have, as more people bought into the system, they would essentially have like a nonstop, you know, series of customers that would make it worth lowering their rates. So that's what they had done to be part of these exchanges. They are basically now saying, if you're about to pull this shit, we're out.
We're out. Yeah.
So the whole system is going to collapse, essentially, if they pass repeal and delay. And they don't want that to happen.
No, they don't.
Because if it's a direct result of their actions, people immediately lose health insurance, even as Obamacare is still in place.
Yeah.
Then that's going to be difficult to spin.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure they'll try.
Well,
but I would contend that they know how terrible this is.
But they do, because we are starting to see some defectors already. So this, as they are sorting, like, it seems like Paul Ryan is sort of like starting to push forward with this repeal and delay plan. We are now starting to see enough members of the Senate voicing concerns about this that would basically keep that from passing.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing is the first step in getting rid of it is this budget situation.
It's a budget resolution that they're dealing with in order, and they have lots of plans for this budget resolution.
And it doesn't necessarily mean the budget resolution itself doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's just sort of like
it's the first step.
It's like a working document, basically. Yeah. So this step is sort of is the first step in defunding Obamacare.
Right.
So, because they're just not going to give it any money.
Right.
So, that's going to come up for a vote pretty soon.
Right.
They have released this budget resolution. You can go and look at it. Also, it raises the deficit, by the way.
Classic Republican move.
Which is why Rand Paul is out there saying that he's not going to vote for it. He's sort of a loner on that.
He's a lone wolf in why he's not going to vote for it.
Because
but
the
he's
other people,
part of the defection.
Right. The other people are just scared. We're going to give you the list of the people who have voiced.
They're going to lose their fucking jobs because they're in swing states or in, you know, insecure positions. Like Susan Collins could easily be replaced by a Democrat in Maine.
Totally.
You know, that's easy. Lamar Alexander and John McCain know what their situation is.
Right.
And
these are all major power players,
too. These are major power players.
If you recognize these names that we're saying right now, it's because they're,
And, you know, Tom Cotton, I was interested to see, but as Brent sort of clarified for me, it's interesting. This is interesting to me because it shows that they know exactly how badly this could fuck with their legacy.
Yep.
Because Tom Cotton is somebody who they see as sort of like a future.
People are always talking about how great Tom Cotton is going to be.
A future.
He's smart. He's an Iraq War veteran. He's young. You know, handsome in the way that at least Republicans
believe
people
to be handsome.
Right.
Yeah.
And I agree though. He seems
because he's nuts.
He's nuts. He seems conservative enough that he wouldn't give a rip about this. Mm-hmm. But like, I think that that's why he's out against this, because he's the latest person this week actually to be like, I don't think that we should be voting on this if we don't have a plan to replace it with.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, go figure. Tom Cotton, a man who wants to be president, doesn't want to be responsible for kicking 30 million people off of health insurance.
Like,
I mean, shock of shocks.
And this is an example of them knowing just how bad this is.
I agree.
They understand exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then Bob Corker also.
Yeah.
Also part-time nuts and still came out against it. I think, you know, I was saying to Brent, it feels like there is so much bungling and nonsense going on that it's almost like they thought they could dispense with the most basic truths about being in elected office now that they're in power.
Yeah.
On the Republican side. So like, they are, like, literally in Congress to have their first action be to get rid of ethics oversight.
I know.
Like, that is a terrible PR move.
Right.
That any person who's not a complete idiot, who's an elected official, would otherwise know is a dumb idea. And yet, to try that as their first order of business at midnight behind the speaker's back is just an example of how idiotic things have gotten.
I know.
There.
I was saying to you, I'm like, I am getting, as things move forward, I realize it's only been 2 weeks and Trump hasn't even been inaugurated yet, but like, I'm starting to feel like maybe these next 4 years won't be that bad due to just complete and total ineptitude.
Yeah. What I believe you described as Mr. Magoo style antics, in which you might expect one of, like, they're like answering the phone with their shoes and like that. Like, that's
exactly
what
I said earlier.
Going on
I mean,
yeah, I felt like that was a perfect example.
Because it's so crazy. Like, this has been the main thing that they have been wanting to do for 8 years now.
Yeah.
And not only that, one of the other things that is in this budget that they have also been wanting to do forever is to defund Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And on top of the seven people, okay, so they have 52
senators.
They have 52 senators. There are six who have voiced
reservations about
the repeal and delay Obamacare. There are also additional people who are, there are a couple
female pro-choice
Republicans. One is Susan Collins, who we already mentioned.
But
so
one
she's,
is Lisa Murkowski.
But one is Lisa Murkowski. And
who
she,
I recall won an election on a write-in with the last name Murkowski in Alaska, so she's not to be fucked with.
Right, exactly. And she represents a seventh person who might not vote for this budget
and
resolution.
And it's over them defunding Planned Parenthood.
And it's over defunding Planned Parenthood because we also heard from Paul Ryan this week that that is something that they are going to include in this budget resolution.
Yeah.
So
and this
you
is nuts.
Have got you have got 7 out of 52 people who are thinking about not voting on the first budget resolution on the basis of defunding Obamacare and defunding Planned Parenthood, the two things that they have been having wet dreams about for the entire Obama presidency.
I mean,
how can they be in this situation already? They just started and they already can't. They already can't do this.
It's 1 week.
It's fascinating and hilarious and
bizarre.
Upsetting.
And what I love, Trump campaign's position on the Planned Parenthood thing is that they believe in defunding Planned Parenthood as long as they continue to perform abortions. But we should remind you that the Hyde Amendment makes it so that their abortions cannot be publicly funded.
Right, exactly. And he says that he goes on in that sentence that they don't want to continue to fund perform abortions, and they want to reallocate their funding to community health centers that provide comprehensive health care for women, which is exactly what Planned Parenthood is, and they're not getting any money, as you said, for the Hyde Amendment to get the abortion. So basically, he wants to just keep Planned Parenthood, is what he said to you.
He wants to reestablish Planned Parenthood as a distinct entity so that Planned Parenthood itself can perform abortions and women just have to go to two separate locations to get their health care and, And then in those states where you have to get an ultrasound first, that's going to get very complicated. Because what if they have to go to three different locations they have to go to a special ultrasound location?
Right. Because
we can only have half private public funding.
Exactly.
I mean, with this kind of logic, I mean, nothing makes any sense.
Yeah. I just think it would be so rich get this passed based on these two things.
Yeah. Based on their two keystone...
like pet issues.
And I mean, I feel like if their two biggest issues mean that it can't get passed, and so they know it's not going to pass, more defections are likely because people will find other things in the funding package.
Oh, totally.
Like, you know, there will be deficit hawks who suddenly are like, well, if this isn't going to pass, I'm not going to vote for a thing that raises the deficit.
People will join the Rand Paul...
Exactly, because that's also a major Republican, you know, in the sort of old Republicanism, that's a major issue and that's like a major talking point. And to have to say you voted for a budget that increases the deficit, you know, in order to get rid of Obamacare might not be such great news for them if they can't get it passed anyway.
Right.
So I see, like, at a certain point, I feel like, how are they going to get anyone to vote for this thing?
I don't know.
I mean, they're going to get, like, two people to vote for it. It's going to be Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell.
Right, exactly.
And I see Mitch McConnell vagging out at the last minute. I just feel like, why not? Well, you know who would vote for it? In a pinch, Chuck Schumer, just to get some press. Get out there in the story.
Yeah.
to give an interview or two.
Yeah. Ted Cruz, maybe.
Ted Cruz introduced a bill, or is planning to introduce a bill that would provide congressional term limits.
Oh, yeah, term limits.
I'm very confused about my life at this moment. Because I tend to not want to agree with Ted Cruz. I think he's the devil incarnate.
I know.
And yet... I, like many Republicans, am a huge fan of term limits.
See, I think
they're the greatest.
I have mixed feelings on term limits, I guess.
I have unmixed feelings about term limits.
I understand, and it really, truly depends on the day. Like, there are some days I'm wholeheartedly with you, and there are other days that
I
feel like I have been at my job for 13 years, and I continue to get better at it.
Right. No, it's not that I don't understand that losing the institutional know-how is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
I feel like in a world in which there is no way to reasonably win against incumbents for campaign finance reasons, that's the only way I see to kind of sort out some of the campaign finance issues, aside from having comprehensive campaign finance legislation, which, guys, these people who depend on this money are not going to pass.
Not going to pass, right.
So,
well, I'm with you there.
That's why I'm sort of like, first of all, even with our current system, we just ended up with an entire administration of people with no institutional know-how.
That's true. So we'll see how that goes.
So it's like... at this point, we have nothing to lose.
Maybe they'll do a bang-up job, and then seem like a great idea, because it turns out you don't have to know anything to begin with.
Exactly.
Well, I don't think that's what's going to happen.
I don't think that's what's
going
to happen. But I also think that to some degree, that's what having a smart and responsible staff and core of bureaucrats in Washington is for, is to continue,
that's
true. For continuity.
Yeah,
sake,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I do worry that I agree with Ted Cruz.
Yeah, that's
I feel, I've been having a little bit of an identity crisis this week about that.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone to take the I agree with Ted Cruz out of context and put that in some other podcast where it looks like I agree with Ted Cruz.
Put a photo of it, like, and make an infographic of your face.
Literally anything that is happening that's not this story.
Yeah. But while we're talking about, you know, Planned Parenthood, let's stay on the subject of women here.
Let's stay on the subject of women as we know them, which is apparently not how the Washington Post knows them.
God.
Because they have the Washington Post Express, which is like their daily
free.
That's like their, I guess their, like, commuter paper.
Yeah.
And they ran a cover story on the Women's March in Washington, which I'm going to.
I know. It's so exciting.
And the graphic was people coming together in a gender symbol.
Right.
But the gender that they chose to put the symbol up for was men.
It was the male symbol.
So apparently there is not a single person copy editing or editing at all at the Washington Post who knows what the
symbol for
women is.
They redid it and tweeted it out, but of course, after they were rightly taken to task and also had to...
Are there any female editors at that paper?
...had to issue an apology. I guess not.
I mean, and even, like, are there any male editors at that paper?
Well, I know.
Are monkeys editing that paper?
Or like, smart people?
like,
that's what I'm concerned about.
Like,
I'm not concerned about whether they were men or women.
No,
I mean,
I
hope that women are represented there just because they should be. But even if they're not, like... know
just
what those symbols
knowers.
Are.
Knowers.
Right.
To any knower.
Right.
It's like, they don't have to be educated people.
No,
they don't have to be over the age of 10.
No.
Like, a 9-year-old might have been able to pick this up. It's just, it's a little alarming.
Yeah.
Also alarming.
Yeah.
We're about to not have any diplomatic representation anywhere in the world. Because
speaking of continuity.
Speaking of continuity.
We're not going to have any in our embassies.
No. Normally, when a new president comes in, they extend a grace period to the diplomatic posts from the administration before so that we have, like, sitting ambassadors in places.
Right. You have sitting ambassadors
in places. Because it takes a while to get everyone over there.
And it's also just a kindness.
Right. Because these people live lives.
These people live lives. They live there. Their families live there. Their children go to school there. So, you know, after you have an election, you have to have a certain amount of time. Sometimes these people are even kept on, too, right. because they're not necessarily political.
Some ambassadors are not super political. You know?
Right, exactly.
And a lot of embassy staff is just...
So we're getting rid of all of these people, and they're being replaced, and they're not getting their grace period. So that now they just have to scramble. Basically fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got... potentially nowhere to live. Their kids are in the middle of the school year.
Right.
We're about to leave a bunch of posts ambassador lists.
Right, because he's not going to have all of these ambassadors filled.
Every country in the world immediately.
Right.
So
and some of them, I think, have to be. Don't some of them also have to be approved?
Yeah, I think
too?
So.
Not all of them do. I don't think, but I mean, I think that there are some of them that actually have to be up for a vote.
So like this, we could just be like having no diplomatic presence in like any country for like months.
Yeah, it's also just besides the fact it's like not a great idea, it's just mean.
It's a mean thing to do.
Right?
And also like I can't even like is this truly like a blanket thing where even apolitical posts are like whatever, he wants to replace the ambassador to China. I get it.
Right.
The governor of Iowa. Like whatever, that was one of his signature issues. He can do that right away. But like, is the ambassador to like, you know, Cote d'Ivoire like gonna just have to like go home even though potentially they are just a person who is a professional diplomat
right.
who seemed like they wouldn't die in Cote d'Ivoire? Like,
yeah.
You know, are there countries that we don't deal with on a daily basis in high stakes negotiation that still like, I don't, you know, where we don't appoint hugely political ambassadors to them because we just need people who are like diplomats to fill those posts.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of the time State Department lifers get put in those kind of posts. Like we're just going to make all them go home too.
Yep.
This is nuts. This is nuts.
It's crazy.
This is crazy talk.
Oh boy.
You guys, unless you love crying, do not watch Michelle Obama's final speech.
I know.
If you are in the mood for...
Because you'll cry. She'll cry.
Everybody
standing
behind
her is crying. It's like a giant... cry fest.
I read the speech and cried, and then I was like, I'm never watching
she basically
this. But
gave,
then I watched it like an idiot.
She gave yet another speech that probably would have won a presidential election.
Yeah. Well, she could have won this presidential election because it had one word in it that was lacking from every piece of messaging that the Clinton campaign put forward, which is the word hope.
Hope and speaking directly to young people.
Yeah. Like just two quick things that would have won her the presidency this time around.
Right.
I read an article that was about what kind of happens to her after the election. I mean, after they become private citizens again and whether or not she kind of regains, you know, whether she keeps this sort of like mom in chief persona publicly or whether she goes back to being a pretty pointed critic of a lot of things. Because she is someone who does not, as of now, have political aspirations.
No,
and
she doesn't.
I don't believe in dynasty style politics, so I don't want her to have political aspirations.
And I think her nature is to not suffer any fools.
But that's her nature is to not suffer any fools. She's very smart and very articulate.
But she's had
she
to spend at least about 7 years
fools.
Suffering them.
There's been it's been fool city in there.
Because when she started, she wasn't suffering fools.
No, and she got in all this trouble for it.
Right. Got called an angry black woman.
Right.
People didn't like her.
And so she
which
kind
is unfair, obviously. I'm not
totally
saying
unfair. No,
that,
of course. But I mean, like, so she, you know, they kind of adjusted her persona to be much more subtly political.
Right.
And much, you know, focus on these sort of apolitical
issues.
Talked
about how she shopped at Target.
She's talked about how she is sort of aspires to the, like, Laura Bush mode of being first lady, where you just focus on, like, childhood obesity and, like, things like that, that are, like, no one wants our children to be obese, so, like, that's fine.
Right, that works.
But she is someone who, up until the 2008 campaign, and for all of her life before that, was sort of, like, an avid community activist and also just, like, articulate non-fool sufferer.
Right.
Who I think, you know, we would gain a lot from her insight if she does choose to stop suffering fools again because she knows a lot about how the White House works and what goes on inside of a White House and what also, you know, especially for, I think, people of color in this country who are about to see a White House filled with a bunch of, like, white supremacist nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, what... you do when you're under that kind of attack. Because the Obamas were under that kind of attack the whole time that they were in office.
Yeah.
And they came out talked about that in the looking speech. Like not, fucking superheroes.
In not a super pointed way, but I mean, right. she did talk about
it. But I mean,
about,
right. I would like to hear her one day talk about it in a pointed way.
Me too.
Because I'm curious to know what gives you the strength to get through that and also right? to like continue to be the greatest people on earth
right?
as that happens.
I know.
Because like they came out and still, it doesn't matter who you are, like all, like there are still so many articles that are getting written about just like how great a what great role models they were.
Yeah.
You know, the Obamas were like were sort of unlike every other presidential, you know, marriage that's been marked by some sort of scandal.
Right.
Even the beloved ones.
Well, and considering everything that they went through,
and
I mean,
considering
they really
how much
they really
additional
could have,
stress they went.
They really could have gone
They
to,
could have fallen apart completely.
Totally.
And they came out looking like the greatest, and everyone still sort of personally loves
especially
them. And especially
her.
Michelle.
Good God. I mean,
but so I'm sort of curious whether she sees herself as more effective in that role where she is sort of like able to make these kinds of inspiring speeches.
Right.
Or whether the fact that she is like an extremely well-educated and smart woman who
right.
has been forced to be like the mom to America
would,
this
right.
whole time.
I would sort of like to see her enter the no fuck zone.
Yeah, I want her to stop suffering fools again.
Yeah.
It's funny because on the left, a lot of the time, like back when that story first kind of blew out of hand and they kind of rebranded her, if
right.
you will, a lot of people on the left were sort of like, but that's
Wait
what
a minute.
We like about the Obamas. Like, that's what everyone liked about her on the left.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it would be, once she doesn't have to speak to the whole nation anymore.
I know.
Like, I want her to go back to being a non-fool sufferer.
Yeah, ditto.
So in any case, but like, if you want to cry 1,000 tears,
watch that.
Then watch this speech.
Yeah.
She speaks directly to young people. She speaks about the fact that, you know, the way that, you know, that it is okay and important to have hope in these moments.
Right.
That, you know, that is the thing that gets you through a terrible time like this. And also, you know, in speaking to young people, tells them, like, you know, that they shouldn't take their freedoms as Americans for granted. And because of that, should participate and remember to stay, you know, to lean in, essentially,
yeah.
to use the Sheryl Sandberg
yeah.
word, instead of
sure.
lean out
yep.
in this time where they don't feel like they're being included or listened to or
yeah.
respected. But so I feel like, you know, she did it
Love
again.
Her.
I mean,
gonna miss her.
I know. I hope she doesn't run for office.
No.
I mean, I hope that these kinds of speeches are what she can do forever, plus non-fool suffering. And that, like, I think that the mistake that the Clintons made, because they could have been really effective in the sense, in the way, there are many routes to being an ex-president.
Yes.
You know, Jimmy Carter was widely considered a very ineffective president, but he became one of our greatest ex-presidents.
Yeah.
You know, George Bush has been a non-entity as an ex-president.
Right.
We've never heard from him again. He, like, has gone painting.
Right.
You know, he's, like, now a hobbyist painter
right.
professionally or something like
right.
that. I don't even know what he does for a living anymore. Possibly
right.
nothing.
Right.
Bill Clinton has sort of merged those two where he's tried to do good in the world, but he's also kind of, like, created a sort of maelstrom of scandal in his wake, and it's because they continue to have political ambitions.
Right.
I think the Obamas are so effective as community advocates and as sort of, like, as speakers and as like unifiers
yeah.
that to see them kind of go the Clinton route would be really disappointing because I hope that they become more than the Carter version of being an ex-president because he is just like doing good work.
Right, exactly.
But
he's
a sort of the people that galvanize all of us to be Carters.
Right.
Because I think
yes.
they could do that.
I think they could too.
And
that's
think,
a good way to put it.
You know, I think
actually,
that
yeah.
that is the sort of finding the middle ground between being a Clinton or a Carter
yeah.
is like they have the sort of person skill, the people skills to do it.
Because yeah.
the thing that Clinton has is people skills and Carter
yeah.
has just like humble skills.
Yes.
He's just like a humble person.
yeah.
So like he is able to personally set a good example for us. But
yeah.
I think the Obamas could teach us how to set good examples for each other or whatever cheesy
yeah.
way you'd want to put that. I think
sure.
that would be like a great.
Wow, that's about as cheesiest
I know,
I've ever heard you.
I know.
Mm,
but I mean, I feel like that
no,
would be.
I get it.
That would
I
be.
Totally
that's
get
what
it.
I don't want to get caught in another thing where we have to start hating her in 20 years.
Right. I know.
We didn't
exactly.
have to hate Hillary Clinton when
no.
she left the White House.
No, we didn't.
I didn't even hate her that much when she became the Secretary of State and she had been my senator and I was mad at her.
Right.
But I start when she ran for president twice and failed both times.
Yeah.
Like, then I had to start hating her.
Yeah.
Because she was, like, dragging me down with her.
Right.
You know?
Like, yeah, I know. Yeah.
That's, I hope.
Yeah, we don't want that.
I hope that we
Michelle.
Don't suffer that.
No.
You know?
No. In final news, this is a ridiculous story, but Donald Trump apparently hates his own children and, does he have grandchildren? He must, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who
yeah,
knows?
Yeah, he has, like,
what
1,000. Ivanka
yeah,
has, like, 400
yeah.
kids.
Right? Yeah. So, anyway, in 2009, the Obamas got this huge playset when Sasha and
Malia,
thank you, were young.
Yeah.
It was on the South Lawn.
They love their children.
Right. South Lawn of the White House.
Yeah.
He very kindly offered to let the Trumps keep it and have it there.
Right.
Nope.
He doesn't want
to get rid of it.
Grandchildren to have fun.
Nope.
He hates his grandchildren.
No. The Twitter, of course.
He's going to put them behind a desk and make them do business right. work.
Twitter made a lot of, you know, hilarious jokes about that it wasn't, you know, gold plated right. enough or, you know, whatever. But like, what? Just leave the swing set.
What kind of choice is that to make?
It's so ridiculous.
He has a lot of grandchildren.
Yes.
Small ones. Yes. Baby ones. Ivanka gave birth like 2 seconds ago.
Yes. When he has a young child.
Yeah, and he has a young
his
child.
His own.
Well, I mean, like, right. Does he not want anyone to have fun?
I guess not.
And he must hate children too. Yeah. On top
so
of that.
So it's gone. It got taken away. The Obamas donated it to charity. So that's great. But yeah. I mean, like.
But I mean, still.
It doesn't make any sense.
That's just like an unnecessarily cruel thing to do.
Yeah.
Like that. In any case. That's like the most peak Trump thing I've ever heard in my life. I've been saying
totally
that a lot
agree.
About Trump, so it's like hard to know when I'm serious or not, even to myself.
Exactly.
But that is very peak Trump to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And in final news.
Right. We don't have
NBC
a whole story about this, but NBC has made some shitty hires.
To make
by
some
the way.
Bad hires.
Yeah. They've hired Megyn Kelly, which is not great. Greta Van Susteren, I get on some level in that
she's a little less incendiary than Megyn Kelly.
She is. She was at CNN for like a long time. Yeah. She sort of is like a fairly well-respected journalist. She like gets people to come on her show. She gets good interviews.
Right.
She at least attempts to remain fairly impartial. I feel like it's sort of hard to do that on Fox News.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how she is sort of like the slot that they have her in is sort of like to bridge the like daily news blocks like into the I think she's like in the 5 o'clock or the 6 o'clock or something like that. So like I think that she will probably ultimately be fine. But like don't hire Megyn Kelly. As much as we sort of like decided that we liked her as a person who was like
as
a Fox News person who was like taking on Trump, like she sort of rose to fame on the backs of a lot of racism.
The thing she's most famous for taking on besides Trump is racism.
Right.
Not taking it on. She's
but being
spouting it.
In it.
Yeah.
Right. So I get that they probably feel like that's like a good ratings hire, and it may very well be, but also like just don't be doing that.
Don't be doing that. And don't even, like, this is something, my mom always complains that she gets really angry at NPR during Republican administrations because they go and hire a shit ton of conservative commentators who then validate every horrible thing that the president is doing. And suddenly, for 8 years, you're living in misery.
Right.
I feel like this is an example of NBC doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, we need someone to explain all of these crazy pants antics to our viewers, so we'll hire someone who will validate them.
Right, not
we
the
don't,
answer.
Resistance is important in this moment. This is not normal presidential politics. This is not even a Bush getting elected.
Right.
This is crazy pants terrible.
Yep.
We have a completely unqualified person who knows nothing about government about to take the presidency and is bucking every precedent that keeps us from being, you know, keeps us as a nation that has a peaceful transfer of power and functions through these transitions.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the time to pull this shit for ratings.
It's not.
Do your job and report the fucking news.
Thank you.
And while you're at it, fire everyone else that's at NBC. Fire Chris Matthews.
Fire
Lawrence O'Donnell. He's like medium fine, but I'm just a little mad at him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, fire anyone at this point who is so aggressively partisan that they can't figure out how to resist in a smart way.
Yeah.
That they alienate their own people in resistance.
I'm with you.
Like, I can't with any of you right now.
Really?
The news, you guys. The news.
All right, guys. Pay attention to the confirmation hearings this week, please.
And we will post resources for you to keep track of Trump as this goes on. If you have any interesting links like that or Facebook groups that you belong to that are helping people kind of galvanize around action or anything like that,
tweet
let us know. We'll pass that information along to our listeners. We will tweet it out wide. We don't tweet things wide because no one follows us on Twitter, but we'll tweet it medium.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll help pass along any information that will assist in the resistance.
Yes.
Information tactic spreading.
Gathering.
Situation.
Spreading.
A lot of words I just said there. None of them made sense.
Yeah.
And next week is going to be week two. I don't know. I didn't have any news for next week.
Yeah, I don't know.
Next week is not the March on Washington. The week
after
is the March on Washington.
Yeah.
I forgot what day I was going to Washington.
Grim. Okay.
But we'll see. We'll talk to you next week. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.